Welcome to My Life as a Landlord, where we educate curious U.S. and Canadian landlords, answer rental questions, and clear up confusions about all things housing. If you're looking for some landlord education, interesting guests, and awkward conversations, you've come to the right show. I'm your host, Dr. Jennifer Salisbury. This is My Life as a Landlord. Welcome to it.
Hello there. Thanks for joining me at My Life as a Landlord. I am Dr. Jen, and I'm so excited for you joining us today, educating yourself by listening to this podcast. Many of you have reached out asking about roommates and renting rooms out of your house, also known as house hacking. Well, what do you do when you have a paying roommate and they are ... fill in the blank with whatever kind of mischief, drama, or something else? I am joined today by my U.S. Naval Academy classmate, Matthew Greenewalt, here to tell us about his interesting solution to house hacking, roommate style. Welcome, Matthew.
Hi, thanks for inviting me. Yes, house hacking is ethical, so it's ethical hacking, I would add, but hopefully everybody's interested in how we talk through it.
Ethical house hacking. Maybe I'll add ethical to the title of the episode. Okay, ethical house hacking roommate style. That's good. Okay. This is the first time you've been on a podcast.
Yes, it is. So thanks for having me, and hopefully it's helpful to everybody.
It's pretty painless. So Matthew, I had to chuckle because as soon as I interviewed our classmate, Deputy Commandant Captain Dave Foreman, once the episode aired, I got a Facebook message from you saying, "Hey, I'm doing this. I'm a landlord and I've done some house hacking. Maybe I should be a guest on your show." And I said, "You know what? I think you should."
Okay. Yeah.
So let's talk about we graduated in May of 1998. We're recording this in February of 2024. There's been a few minutes in between there. Catch us up. What's happened? You went in the Navy, did all kinds of stuff.
It's too bad we're not both retired from the Navy now. But we need alternate long-term paychecks. So hopefully landlording does it for us. I would say, so it has been good to catch up since seeing you at the Academy. I would say generally life, didn't go exactly as planned, but overall I feel fortunate that I've had a very full life. And I think the Navy was a great start to that. I did get married the day after graduation. I was one of those. And then 14 months later, I already had our first child and my naval flight officer wings. So I kicked off quickly.
Oh, you were
busy. I was able to go. Yes, I was busy, and I got busier. So I was able to serve in a P3 squadron. It does make me feel old that the P3 is now retired and replaced by the P8, but they're both fabulous aircraft. I got to, lead sailors and also travel, the world. I got to go to Iceland, Norway, I think Italy, Spain, Greece, another half dozen or other countries. It was right kind of during 9/11. So, there's a range of missions to very serious things I can't talk about, to very silly things. Like, we flew out of Scotland and we really looked hard to find the Loch Ness Monster, but all of our sensors and equipment could not find it. So I'm saying it's not real. And then when my flying time was done, we were up to three children at that point. And then I had the opportunity to teach Navy ROTC while concurrently getting an MBA at Duke University. So, the military is great at providing education opportunities, and I got to, benefit from that for both undergrad and grad school, really. And at that point, two additional children were born. So we're up to five at this point. And I transitioned to my civilian life and a career in marketing, which I've been doing ever since. And believe it or not, there was one more child for a grand total of six by the time I moved into landlord.
Wow. I really like the bit about the Loch Ness Monster. I think that's really funny. That's good. That's good. Well, so, you contacted me about being a landlord and that you were not the typical landlord, that you ended up renting rooms from your house. So what happened? I mean, you're married, you're military, six kids, and then all of a sudden you contact me and you're a landlord renting rooms out in the house. How did that all come about?
Yeah, so that was definitely not the plan. But I was thankfully able to house all these children. which then led to a large six-bedroom house that we lived in Maryland. Though, you know, sadly, there were a lot of struggles that led to a divorce. Our youngest that I mentioned had passed away at age nine. And this was after a long number of years of kind of fighting chronic medical issues. And then really weeks, you know, later, essentially my, you know, prior partner went into a different direction in her life and wanted a divorce. So, you know, long story aside from the real estate, you know, there was just kind of this general overall, like a lot of life challenges. And there I am, you know, with this whole different scenario, right, that I'm working with, right, to work through. And then, you know, divorces are really complicated. They get more so with six children and more so with, you know, houses and whatnot. And we were in a scenario where we used, you know, good military VA benefits and so forth to get a home with zero money down, which I think generally is good, but not when you, you know, have to leave a few months later. So I think we were about 18 months into owning the home. And so, you know, if we had to sell then, we'd be way upside down. So, right, okay, can't sell the house. I wanted the kids to have stability. So absent any agreement with my ex-wife on a nesting arrangement, which I wanted, but absent that, we couldn't just have two six-bedroom houses, you know, for the kids to go back and forth between. Of course. So I deferred that, you know, I was traveling for work a lot, you know, that she would stay in that big house with the kids while I went essentially into like a transient lifestyle for a few years, which is another podcast. Okay. I'll link to that one at the end or something. So anyway, the arrangement was that I would get the house back eventually. And I was hoping that at that time, the kids would want to then maybe go 50-50 and be in the house. That was kind of my hope. But, you know, they're teenagers and we'd already set the precedent, you know, that they lived with one house. They didn't really want to go back and forth.
Sure.
And so, you know, I had the right intent to try to be, you know, as present as I could with them, but I found myself alone in the six bedroom house. It was a little bit better situation than, you know, selling it 18 months after buying it, but it still wasn't a good market. It would have been like a loss or a break even. Mm. And also, you know, I'm looking at it, doesn't really make sense for me to have all this empty space away from me. I do like that I was like really close to the kids. They stayed in the same school district, so we were close. Okay. But I'm like, how do I make this work? Right. So I'm kind of like problem solving this. Do I just live here alone and kind of suck it up financially? I didn't really like that, you know, but I didn't want to sell the house. We also had the scenario of financing the house. So, you know, we bought the house as a married partnership and both were on the mortgage. So she didn't want to be on the mortgage anymore. So she's right. Like, hey, you gotta get me off the mortgage. And while that ideally would be simple, it actually requires a whole another round of underwriting.
Mm-hmm.
So I know this is a lot of detail, but this is just
This is great.
So,
this is exactly what the listeners want to know is how'd you get into it?
I was like, oh no, like I, you know, qualified originally with just my income, but now I have a lot more expenses because I have alimony and child support as additional liability.
Right.
So I couldn't do it from a DTI perspective unless I got more income from renting the home.
DTI, so, debt to income. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Debt to income. So my income was five, but my debt was higher. And then I'm like, okay, well, I didn't want to rent it out as a rental property because then I'd have to refinance it as a rental property, which is a higher interest rate.
Mm.
And you have to put a lot of extra money down. So like, that's not going to work. So right. I wanted to hold on to it as my primary residence. I wanted to bring in additional income so that I could requalify for the mortgage, right? And that was kind of my strategy. And I first tried the idea of, and thankfully I had a basement. So it was like a basement level that was very spacious with a bedroom, bathroom, living room, and so forth. And then upper level mm-hmm. with two floors and five rooms, like one family, the upper two levels. And I probably could have kept dropping price to make that happen, but it just wasn't a good market for it. That's not like a family with kids didn't want you know, the person in the basement, so to speak. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to take the plunge and start renting by the room. So anyway, that's the setup of how I got to that strategy.
So you had a plan. Life, you know, if you want to hear God laugh, tell him your plan, right? That's nearly what we deviate from. Couldn't sell it. You were upside down because you had financed it. Okay, got it. Couldn't refinance on your own just to own the house outright. So tried to rent it. You could either rent it as the whole house or rent it with you in the basement. And so you get to this point where now you're set up, you're living in the basement, and you've got 5 rooms that you can rent to roommates. Okay, that's quite the setup. There's a lot to that. And I think I track through the whole thing. So tell us, you know, what kind of people are renting by the room in these big houses? Tell us a little bit more about these roommates. Yeah. And I mean, because it really is roommates.
Yeah, for sure. It was a scenario of these 5 individual rooms with people that did not know each other, right? It might have been nice if I could have pre-planned this and had my own friends or something, but that's just not where it goes. So it was more of a, let's get people to co-live together and so forth. So yeah, there's been various challenges with, you know, everything from small conflict to like little things like, hey, I had some water bottles and now they're gone, or the milk is gone, right? To more of like, I need to intervene on, you know, not like major conflicts, but, you know, enough of a conflict where there needs to be a referee, so to speak.
Right.
While I was living there in the basement with them, that helped kind of keep it relatively calm, I guess. but, you know, I also had house rules. So setting rules in the lease agreement is important. You'll need to add like additional things that you wouldn't think of, you know, with a normal lease, because you need to have things like quiet hours, or think through things like number of guests, right? We can't just have everybody bringing 4 people over every night or have people, you know, living with them, et cetera. Like you need to put controls in place, no smoking and so forth. So kind of had like a lot of extra rules in the lease, but generally the reception to that was good. Like people were glad there were rules so that other people wouldn't, you know, have that problem, and at least something I could point to if there was an issue. Another kind of random example of things to think through was refrigerator space, right? So they were able to navigate so many other things comfortably with space in the house, but, you know, people like to have their fridge with their own stuff in their own way and their own organization and not messy or whatever. So I ended up buying two whole additional fridges so that, you know, everybody had at least like half of a fridge space. I might have even in hindsight bought 2 more just to make it no problem, but a lot of fridge space. And another thing was like parking space. So if you have a lot of additional roommates and cars, you got to think about that. I was lucky that my lot kind of was in front of a green space. So I had kind of my driveway space out in front of my house, and then kind of across the street, like people able to park without being in front of somebody else's house. So it worked out well, but, you know, there's a lot of kind of, again, like just different things to think about to start thinking how it would set up.
Lots of stuff that you wouldn't think about. And I really appreciate that you're, you know, forward thinking, and that you were able to pivot. And like you say, referee, because, you know, you've got people living in close quarters and they don't know each other. And, you know, when you throw in something else, your house was in a HOA, like, holy crap, what did they say about all this? I mean, I'm sure people were reporting you and there were conversations there. How did the HOA look at all this?
Yeah. So, I mean, we definitely felt this group of us fell outside of the norm of the community, right? We're seeing a lot of people coming and going that look different. And I'm like going around the back to my basement. Like I didn't go through, I just kind of circumvented the group, right? I just went around in the basement. Just all these cars, like everyone's going, okay, what's going on? Has he got an Airbnb or whatever other theories they had, right? So I did get reported. They'd have neighbors like want to kind of talk to me, right? Et cetera. I know the story. I'm like, hey, as you kind of heard, not the most happy story. I'm like, sorry, this is where I am. I'm trying to pay, you know, take care of my family. This is how I'm doing it. But I did understand from the HOA rules that I couldn't do short term. Like I knew I couldn't Airbnb. So all the leases had to be at least a year. But that home did not, that HOA didn't have any provisions around like selling, renting out by the room. Mm-hmm. The house I'm in now is like a new construction neighborhood, and it does actually call that out. Like you need to rent it to kind of one entity or one lease. So anyway, I was fine and I was in the clear, but it is something to definitely check into before you think about this is what is the HOA, you know, how's it going to work?
Now, here's another thing. I know you and I had talked about, you know, the financial strategies and all this. Did your insurance agent have any issues with this?
Not an insurance issue. Like I said, definitely a mortgage one
right.
to navigate. But I did, though that, now that you ask, I did add umbrella insurance. So,
okay.
Because I don't know if someone's going to slip and fall, right? And blame me because I did whatever. And there's ice on, you know, and it's like, I'm doing all the maintenance of like things like when it snows, you know, and there's whatever. So I did add umbrella insurance. I think it was, I never had to use it thankfully, but I was like, yeah, I got enough moving parts here where let me just get some extra coverage. So yeah, that right. was another thing I did.
Yeah. But all this stuff adds up and there's a lot of people that are, you know, they're trying to be realistic and strategic about how they are doing their landlording. And so this comes up quite often where they go, hey, my children have moved away. They're married and we don't want to really sell the house. I'd rather just rent out a room. And then it starts to go sideways. One of the things I always go back on and say, you know what, if you had something written, like what you had said a lease with each roommate and house rules, and then you accommodate, like you added the fridges and, you know, your property happened to have a little bit more parking to accommodate all of these things. But, you know, the paperwork side is only one part of it. You know, the human side, it seems like the human side's even harder than the paperwork side.
Yeah, for sure. So I would say like the human side has its pros and cons. First, for me personally, the thing I didn't really totally think through was how this would work when I was dating, right? So going on dates as a 40-something, I feel like, accomplished person and being like, yeah, I live in my basement, you know, and I have roommates, you know, didn't go over well with everybody. At the same time, the lovely women who accepted it, I felt like very good about them and that they were seeing other sides of me that were high quality to work with. So I appreciate them, but it was always kind of, oh yeah, I got to explain this on the date sort of thing. And I'm like, no, it's not my mom's basement. It's my basement. I'm choosing to do this, which didn't really make it better. But anyway, so that was like one side of the human, you know, dynamic. The other side is the actual, you know, interaction with the tenants themselves. Mm-hmm. And on the one hand, it felt really good because I felt like, hey, I'm providing safe, high quality, affordable housing to people who need it. So during COVID, right, during a lot of inflation, you know, I'm helping like people in need to be in a good financial place. Certainly it was helping me, but you know, I definitely had them all set up in a place where it's way cheaper than having an apartment. I set up the rent to be kind of a fixed rent that covers the rent plus utilities and the internet and the TV and everything, right? So they didn't have the utilities, just was one flat thing. So they're all happy, I'm happy. But that said, it comes with, you know, a group of people that are maybe have a hard time paying the rent, right? So I'm end up floating a lot of late rent. You know, I'm in discussions with them on solutions because it's not like people who have money that are just not giving it to you or they're irresponsible, right? They're all going through stuff. That's why they're
right.
being a roommate. So I was trying to like problem solve in ways that, again, would just help figure things out for everybody. Like one, I helped her get an attorney pro bono so that she could get her divorce and start getting child support, right? She just was going for, she was like a year plus without she couldn't even hire the attorney to start getting child support, right? So I kind of navigated her through that. She was not English speaking, so we figured all that out with help from my dad, who helped translate. Anyway, that's another old podcast also. So there were, you know, I've had people on payment plans. I really just, from my side, just wanted people to communicate. Like, if we're the only situation that's been negative is when people kind of ghost me, and it's like, hey, I'm really, really nice. If you have a really good reason, we talk, we're figuring it out. If you're just going to ghost me,
then
now we're going to go to court. Right. So there's only been one out of, I don't know, of all the ins and outs, probably, you know, 15 people that had come to that. So I guess what I would say is that it was easy for me to handle the kind of refereeing, because it's just like human interaction and working with people. The financial stress is like hard, because you know people are struggling, and you know I don't like hounding people for money and so forth. So that is what it is. But to me, that was like the hardest kind of human side of it, is dealing with the finances.
Right. Oh my goodness. Well, you mentioned that this big house that you have is in Maryland, and it was in an HOA. So we dealt with the HOA, but I want to ask you about the city/county, Laurel County in Maryland. Tell us how the county, because of course I'm sure that you got reported, or you had to approach them or something. Like, how did that all work on a municipality level?
Yeah, I was proactive about that. I was never reported. From the beginning, I looked it up, you know, sort of thing, then found out it was a county requirement for Howard County, Maryland, to have a license, which when you do it initially, you need to have an inspection. Mm-hmm. It was a unique set. I needed to, you know, disclose my roommate setup, and there was like different, you know, questions they had and how everything was set up. But anyway, I got it all taken care of.
Sure.
I would also say that, you know, it's different by county. The county I'm in now, Anne Arundel, doesn't have a license requirement.
Right.
They have other requirements that are different, but all the counties are different. And the other thing I would just say from like a local level is like social services brought me tenants, right? They're working with tenants who are people who are homeless for whatever reason, or escaping a domestic problem, or whatever the scenario is, right?
Right.
So I've had them reach out to help get things set up. They'll even help sometimes like pay the first month rent. I've had churches, local nonprofits engage with me. So what I would say is that the local government and community is your friend. They might have rules, but they're also an avenue to get, you know, things help. And if anything, I would have thought, you know, if I did do this over again, one of the things would be that I could have just gone to some of these nonprofits or church. Because when I talked to them, they were like, oh, I wish we could just have all five rooms for the church, and we could just like rotate people in and out. But they didn't like that it was already kind of mixed. So anyway, that's something to potentially explore, is like setting something like that up. I know I've read articles before that people deliberately set up, you know, housing for, you know, again, different victims of scenarios, or people who are going through like ex-criminals, right, who have a really hard time getting a place to live.
Right.
You could establish like a home that's specifically for them. They're all in the same bunch, and, you know, we're going to support. So anyway, there's a lot of creative ways to work with nonprofits to make this type of scenario happen that I would, you know, think about in the future.
Wow. You know, when you get yourself into a financial situation, and it, you know, potentially you could lose, you know, quite a bit of money if you have to sell a house at a loss, or you know, the house gets foreclosed on, or whatever the situation may be, there are creative solutions. And what you did was really unique, like really unique. And I love that you've got some lessons learned here. Are you still doing this roommate rental situation? Are you still living in not your mom's basement?
I'm halfway doing it. So I moved out a little over two years ago now. It was great timing, because it was like interest rates were at rock bottom. Like, now's the time to, you know, go lock in a different home,
sure,
that I could also turn into a rental. So I'm in a townhouse right now. I've continued to rent all the rooms, and then I got to also rent out the basement, which was great. I was like, that was the highest yielding rent by far. So I, you know, I just added that to the pile, so to speak. And I'm a few miles away, so I think it would be hard for me to move far away and kind of manage this scenario. But I'm close enough to manage it, and I would keep doing it into perpetuity. Other than the tax laws, so the capital gains tax exclusion for your primary residence only applies if you've lived in it for 2 out of the prior 5 years. So in order for me to exclude up to $250K of capital gains for a single person, you know, my clock for that expires in August. So that's, you know, kind of where I am at that point.
So are you going to be, so you're going to be selling? Is that your plan? Is that your exit strategy?
Yeah. So I, you know, had all, I kind of counted all the months and et cetera. And I've, you know, I thought about moving back in, but I don't think that's what is best for me. So yeah, I deliberately set up all the renewals for all the leases to all end on March 31st. So that was a little bit tricky to navigate because it was very asynchronous, right? People would move in and move out, you know, different cadences over the years. Sure. So when I kind of like saw this, you know, capital gains tax window scenario thing, I kind of tried to set everybody up to all in the same date, right? So I didn't have like partial rent for any months. So that was fun to nail. And then it sets me up to hit the market for real estate in the spring, right? So they all end in March. I'm gonna, you know, be able to sell in April, you know, and have kind of a buffer before August, you know, to have everything closed. So yes. That is part of my strategy also.
Wow. You've really done your homework. I find it interesting when brand new landlords especially get into a situation and they just sort of jump in, and it's not that they don't do their homework. They don't know where to do their homework. They don't know how to do this. And so you've definitely done your homework, which is really great, really cool. So that's great. Okay. Well, so let me ask you another question. Let's zoom out. Your children, that now they, you know, we're on 25 years after grad here. Yeah. Tell us about where your kids are. Are they all in Maryland?
Well, one of them has already finished graduate school.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, she's awesome. And she's a social worker in Denver.
Okay.
One of them has been worked at the Hot Topic. I do not know where he got the cool and trendy jeans because they're not from me, but he does that. He's great with social media and posting on Hot Topic and whatnot. And the other three are all in college locally, kind of studying everything from, I really want to be a dancer, I have a dance major, to, you know, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. So they're all doing great.
Hot Topic, is that the retail clothing store?
Yeah, yes.
Okay, great. Oh my goodness. Well, I guess the question is really on behalf of the listeners saying, you know, a lot of the listeners are what I call nugget landlords. They're seasoned landlords. They've done this for a while. They're not new, but in the event something changes for them, like it did for you, this could be an option. If they have, you know, a big house, they can't sell, it'd be a loss, they can't rent it. If someone was winding their way into a scenario like what you had, what could you offer them and say, hey, prepare yourself. If you have to do a roommate house hacking situation, how can we set them up for success? What would you give them advice about?
Okay. I'll give a two-part answer.
Okay.
One is about the kind of lessons learned around the actual setup logistically. And the other is about, I guess, myself personally.
Okay.
I would say first, like, there's just logistics to set up the room the way it would work for the situation, right? There's obviously lots of people that do Airbnbs. There's all kinds of like things you can learn about that. So you get good reviews and you personalize it or whatever it is people do these days. There's all kinds of crazy Airbnbs in Disney World with Star Wars and everything. That's not what you need to do here. You need to think very practically, like extra refrigerators. You need to have push button. You don't want people doing keys, right? So you want, because you don't, especially as roommates change in and out, You own a push button lock, so everybody can get in the same way, and you can change the combo, you know, occasionally as people come and go, right? Mm-hmm. So old tenants can't come in. You also want those push button locks on their individual doors so that they can have secure access to the room.
So no keys at all.
Yeah. So it's, yes, it's keyless. I did also have like a Nest, like thermostat control, because they would like change the thermostat, whatever, and it would add like utility costs, or everybody be complaining about it if it's too hot. They'd fight over it. So I control it in my app. if they have complaints, I'll move it a couple degrees, but it's like, you know, has boundaries. Anyway, that's part of the setup. I would say, again, like I mentioned, I do the internet for everybody. So you want the super high speed internet, because it's going to be so much demand from everybody. TV, I got Hulu with live TV is what I recommend, because some of the different streaming services have different rules on how many people can access at a given time. And Hulu allows like the whole household to have as much screens as you want. So that worked great. So everybody could have Hulu with live TV. So there's some logistical things. Other kind of in that vein, as far as setup, is I would encourage everyone to do really good financial modeling. So it's a different financial model than renting the whole house or Airbnbs. It's something in the middle. You're going to have a lot of additional expenses to account for. Like I mentioned, the Hulu and like the yard maintenance. You can't really count on the tenants to share the yard maintenance, right? They're responsible for cleaning the inside, but I still had a cleaning service come in like once a quarter, right? Just to make sure it was like not totally degrading. I would say in your financial modeling, you know, account for the fact that you're going to get payments late or maybe not at all, right? That helps take a lot of the emotion out of it, because, you know, hey, it's like when the bank has low credit people, they just assume they're only going to get X, right? And that's baked into their pricing. So bake it into your price and expect a loss, and then don't get emotional about it too much. And I would say also on that kind of part of the financial model, while you're taking some risk by maybe lower credit, you also have a lot of diversified risk, because you're not counting on one tenant for the whole house to pay you like all the rent or nothing, right? I have six rooms. So, you know, most months, at least four of the roommates would be on time, and maybe one or two wouldn't be. And so, you know, you're insulated from kind of a catastrophic, no tenant paid me anything for months. Everybody's kind of coming and going. So yeah, there's a lot to prepare for. Like I said, in the logistics to the mortgage, to the, and whatnot. I would say personally though, you know, I'm discussing this now and I'm very smiley, so to speak. But I'm on the other side of, you know, a very traumatic experience. So,
yeah.
You know, this has been lessons learned around, you know, how to problem solve and find financial stability while going through a lot of emotional duress that I had not experienced before. Like, thankfully, I've been, you know, pretty successful in life. Thankfully, like I had a great academy experience. I had military, you know, I was kind of like not really having problems, you know, per se, until I did. And I wouldn't have been able to, you know, be so capable navigating everything I'm talking about if I wasn't really like taking care of myself, like in my mental health. So what I would just say is, like, you know, if you're seeking the house hack, and you're just got everything going for you, you're just like going to make a smart financial decision, good for you. Like, go for it. Especially if you're young and you like living with roommates is, you know, more normalized, like maybe this is your plan A, but for a lot of us, this is probably plan B or plan C or plan Z, right? This is like, right. Hey, I'm having a hard time and I'm going to try to tack this on as a solution. But I would say, like, you know, there's a lot to navigate in this. So you'll really want to take care of yourself so that you can do it effectively, because there are a lot of things that can go wrong. I'm very fortunate, right? The I didn't have a major problem in the house, like knock on wood, I have five or more weeks of it. You know, the market went up, right? So, hey, it's great. Like, now I'm going to have a gain. You know, I'm worried about capital gains taxes. That's a blessing. So, you know, but at the same time, in, you know, there was a lot to work through as I was going through all this. But yeah, for me, like you know, it's been a game changer in terms of financial health, right? During a period of, you know, having a lot of additional responsibilities financially, I was able to live in my basement and not have a mortgage to pay for while the market's going up, right? That was great. While COVID was happening, aside from all the challenges of living with so many people during COVID and like exposure, you know, it was a really great security blanket to be like, hey, even if I lost my job or this whole thing crumbles, like I feel really safe. So, you know, that was good. And I think I just, you know, learned a lot about business and in life and about interacting with people that, you know, I wouldn't have gotten the chance to learn otherwise. So anyway, maybe that was like a 10-part answer instead of 2 parts, but you know, there's a lot, you know, a lot going on through the whole experience.
There's a lot of people asking questions that you just answered. And so even regardless of how many parts it was in your answer, Matthew, there's a lot of people that are interested in this model and that, you know, you've overcome a lot of things where, you know, maybe they wouldn't think about doing completely keyless. Maybe they wouldn't think about the fridges or the parking or the HOA or the licensing or any of these things that you had to overcome at any one of these, you know, crossroads, you may have been stopped. And this is where people need to educate themselves. In fact, in today's episode, I always have a call to action to all of my episodes have a call to action. I believe that you need to educate yourself and then you need to act. So the action item for the listeners today is to check out your local housing tenancy act or your, you know, even like you had said, your municipality, your county, wherever it is, or your regional district, if you're in Canada. See if there's regulations in your local area regarding roommate type situations. And there may be, but you don't know until you educate yourself. So if there isn't anything in the provincial, state, or territorial housing or tenancy act, then call your local housing authority or your local nonprofit to educate yourself on this creative housing strategy. So that's the call to action today for the listeners, is to do the education part in advance. If house hacking, if roommate, you know, situations is something that you're considering, that you need to do your education in advance, which is exactly what you did, Matthew. That's really cool. Thank you once again for joining me today, Matthew. I really enjoyed talking with you and having you explain your whole story, which, wow, you've overcome a lot. And the story continues.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you reached out because I had no idea that you were a landlord and certainly a non-traditional landlord. I really appreciate that. So that's great. For all you listeners out there, let me know your comments and questions by emailing me at learn@mylifeasalandlord.com. Please know comments and questions create the next podcasts and resources. And if you know of a really great guest like Matthew that I should have on the show, there's a podcast guest application on the website as well. I'm always looking for dynamic guests for all of you to learn from. Check out mylifeasalandlord.com for more details. Thanks one more time to Matthew for joining me today.
Of course.
Join me next week, all you listeners out there, for episode 66. Ever wonder what it's like to play real estate investing really remotely? Next week, I'm interviewing an expat who is living in Peru, but is doing amazingly well with his real estate investments here stateside, which is incredible. Brian Davis is joining me to talk about overseas investing. I will see all of you there.
Thanks for joining us this week. For all the show notes and resources, check out mylifeasalandlord.com. Want to invest further in your landlord education? We've got a toolbox for you, wherever you are in your journey. Make sure you follow the podcast on the platform you're listening on. Thank you again for joining me, Dr. Jennifer Salisbury, in this episode of My Life as a Landlord. I'll see you next time.